Let's get to the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Say good morning to Luke Alvey. Luke, it's been too long. How are you, man?
Ryan, far too long, mate. We've never been able to get a game of golf in, and a couple of majors and two championships have passed since we last spoke. It's good to hear your voice.
It's not you, it's me. It's been all the sports all at once. I've been bouncing between afternoons and mornings. I don't know which way's up. And I'm sorry we haven't golfed, because I really do want to golf. It's just... You know, I got a weekly that I try to do every other week with buddies, and then the schedule fills up real quick, and I wish it was with you, but it's usually for registering kids for that and taking this to the depot, and I don't know, just busy.
No, I get it, mate.
Busy.
I'm an afterthought. That's fair enough.
No. We have one car. I'd love to drive it to Kananaskis and play with you every day. It's not that simple, though, sadly.
Right.
How are you doing? This is an event that you've worked in the past, and I don't believe we have you on the phone from Winged Foot right now.
No, unfortunately. I wouldn't have been able to do it regardless if Fox Sports had kept the rights. This will be my first Miss US Open in 5 years, which is a real shame because Winged Foot is such a historic venue. Once they lost the rights, that being Fox Sports, to NBC, my gig dried up. But look, if I was still to have one, I wouldn't have gone because I would have had to have quarantined for 14 days when I get home. And you know, I'm not that hard up for the work right now to need to do that. I'm more than happy to sit back and watch this on the television like everyone else.
Give us some history on this course specifically, and after that, I guess we can get into the USGA and their obsession with making pros look like amateurs. But first off, Wingfoot, what makes it special? And what do you know about this course that will make it so menacing to the world's best players?
Well, Winged Foot West, which is the course they're using for the US Open, Winged Foot has two venues, East and West, both as good as each other. They were designed by the legendary A.W. Tillinghast in the golden era of architecture back in the late 20s, 30s of the 1900s. It was recently restored by Gil Hance to host another major championship. It was restored just in the last sort of 2 to 3 years since its last hosting of the US Open, which was in 2006. All past majors at Winged Foot have been bloodbaths. Very few players have been fortunate to get away with a score remotely close to even par to win it, simply because it's just so penal. They make the rough as brutal as they can, but it's not the rough that everyone should be focusing on. It's the greens. These green complexes would not be designed in the modern era simply because they're too tough. But back then, it was more creative, a more extravagant style of architecture, which is why it is the golden era. It's so fun. But for these players this week, it'll be anything but. It is just it is as tough as golf gets in the United States.
So when you say too difficult, that's why it wouldn't happen anymore. Are we talking about multiple levels and huge elevation changes and tiers on greens? Are you talking about small greens? Are you talking about not being receptive to the ball landing on them? Like what makes them so difficult, or you could even argue unfair?
Yeah, a lot of slopes from back to front. They're sort of tilted at the player. So if you go long, almost impossible to get it up and down, particularly with the long rough around the greens. But there's so many tiers and layers to them, a lot of undulations. You know, you just need to take a look at that first green for an indication. And it really, Winged Foot punches you right between the eyeballs on the first hole and then keeps hitting you for the next 17. It just does not let up. And for whoever ends up winning that week, most people think, oh, it was the person that drove it in the fairway. Well, it's not. It's your 100 yards and in golf, because everyone gets torched off the tee. So anyone who can put the ball within that 100-yard vicinity and get it up and down from there, and that's how Jeff Ogilvy managed to win in 06 at this very venue. A lot of people will remember the 06 US Open for Phil Mickelson blowing it on that 72nd hole when he, you know, block-carved his drive into the trees and made a double. But Colin Montgomery had a great chance. Jim Furyk had a great chance. And in the end, it was a classy short game display by the Australian Jeff Ogilvy that saw him claim the US Open. So, yes, there's a lot of big stars going into this one, really great form. But don't be surprised if it's not your biggest name that wins this week.
Okay, so +5 won it back in 2006. And we'd heard some murmurs around the golf reporting industry that the USGA would be happy if the winning score was +8. A, is that psychotic? And B, is that realistic?
And C, it's not true. Okay. John Bodenhammer, who's become the head of tournaments for the USGA, he's replaced Mike Davis. he came out at the start of the week and said, look, this notion that we want to protect par is a load of codswallop. What they're trying to do is find the best player. But this week, it is not so much a test of skill, but it's a test of will. Whoever can keep their head in the game and not get frustrated by constantly being in penal rough and struggling around the greens, that's the person that survives, and that's what the USGA wants. They want someone who wins the battle of mind as much as the battle of the skill.
So who jumps out at you? Because I think we have this fascination, as you sort of alluded to, with the guys that drive the ball so majestically, and you look at you know, Bryson's not hitting it great right now, but at times this year, it's just like, wow, look at that. You could drop it 360 yards in the middle of the fairway at sea level. What an incredible skill that is. And we see DJ and his ability to be fine with the ball on approaches and around the green and also hit it a mile. But you said it's a very unique and specialized skill set here that always seems to have success. It's that ability to get it tight to the pin from inside 100. Who does that scream to you?
Look, you've got to look at the top three players in the world because they're playing the best golf. Since the resumption of golf from COVID, Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, and Justin Thomas have been the best players, with the exception of Colin Morikawa. So you put Morikawa in that list, and the reason why he's not in the top five in the world right now, he's very close to it already, is because he hasn't played enough tournaments to get himself there with the rankings. He only turned pro back at the RBC Canadian Open the summer of last year. So he's not yet had 2 years in the world rankings. But they've been the four best players in the world. Dustin Johnson's last four starts have been two wins, two runner-ups. He has to be the favourite this week. And I really like his ability just to keep his mind completely, neutral. I don't want to say dead air runs between his ears, but he's certainly not one that gets hot under the collar like a John Rahm if things go against him. Those three will have to be a huge factor in terms of contending, and Colin Morikawa for that reason. But you want someone that really matches up for this venue and the US Open? Look at Xander Schauffele. This guy's played in three US Opens. He's had a tie for fifth, a tie for sixth, and a tie for third. So he plays great in US Opens. He's basically a clone of Colin Morikawa in the way he plays. He's just got that lovely, dead, steady mindset that just doesn't get hot under the collar if things aren't going his way. He'll be a patient player over the 4 days, and he'll be the kind of guy that can get up and down out of ball washes, get it up and down from 100 yards if he's not hitting fairways. So I like those five players that I've named: Schauffele, Morikawa, and then the big three, DJ, Rahm, and JT. If one of those five don't win it, I'll be stunned.
Where's Tiger at? Because we usually haven't gone this long talking about a major without him. We're either saying what's wrong with him, or we're saying look out, and it's sort of neither here.
Yeah, it is. He's barely the story, isn't he? He's at 50-1 to win it, which is, I can't remember a major where he was at those numbers ever. Brooks Koepka not being there as well has sort of been part of the story because, people feel like they've got a chance, but he's hurt as well. Look, Tiger right now is struggling with the fact that his body's not able to give him enough reps to keep him in sort of form to play very well. And then you get to ballparks like this where it is going to be an absolute grind. He doesn't have the width of an Augusta National to miss fairways and get away with it. So he's almost, rendered, a bit part player in this. He's almost like he's an extra in a movie, which, can you believe it? For a guy who's won 15 major championships and, 82 PGA Tour events, you'd think straight away, well, we've got to put the GOAT right there. But his putting is what's truly letting him down. He's no longer the Iceman on the greens. And when you're not putting well, you do not build momentum in your game. You're actually losing momentum. So it bleeds into all the other aspects. So that's the sole reason why I'm not backing Rory McIlroy this week as well. And he's at 16-1. But Tiger Woods could have a top 20 finish. But could he win it? It's highly unlikely.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Does this rejigged schedule do anything for you in terms of reconsidering what the way that the majors fall or the way your tournaments go, or even, I guess, on a more short-term focus, that the way guys have been playing in form coming into this tournament? It's been very different. Everyone's schedule that they had laid out in January has been completely tattered apart and thrown in the recycling can with numerous events canceled and many of them rescheduled.
Exactly. And then it's one of those situations where we're all going to, just accept this year being what it is. Don't fight it. Just go with it. and they're the players that are doing the best because they're like, well, so be it. It hasn't worked out how I want it to go, but right now I have a major this week and I have a major in 6 weeks' time in Georgia for the Masters. If I can somehow get my games at the level it needs to be to either contend or win one of these two, they're still going to go down as major championships. They're not going to put an asterisk next to it going, oh, that was the COVID year. They don't really count. It's a major championship. And if those players get that into their mind, well, look out. You know, Colin Morikawa, he could go and win this week, and he'll be the first player to win back-to-back majors since Jordan Spieth did it in 2015. Now, at the start of the year, did anyone have Colin Morikawa as a major champion? Of course not. But he's now got one because he won that PGA. And the likes of a Xander Schauffele or a Dustin Johnson and players who are trying, or John Rahm, who's never won one, they're trying to pick one off the table right now. Just go and grab it because it's still a major championship. And that's why I think this is like, it's unique in a way because a US Open in September, how differently will the course play? How firm and fast will it be? Or a little bit more soft and receptive? There's things we just don't truly know. We know that Augusta National is going to play a lot longer and it's going to be a different conditions, a lot cooler than it is in the spring compared to the fall. But it doesn't matter. It's still a major championship. And that's all the players need to focus on. Just do their best around that venue that week.
Just pulling up the weather here for what I believe is called Memoronic, New York. This is obviously greater New York City.
Yeah, it's about 45 minutes north of the city. It's a lovely area.
We expect anything chaotic? It looks rather civil for mid to late September. This is not going to be open championship weather, at least on first
glance. No, it's actually a delightful time of year, the fall portion of the year in the northeast of America. Good temperatures, you know, mid-70s in terms of Fahrenheit, mid-20s in terms of Celsius. There might be a little bit of rain there that'll keep the green soft, but they do have that ability to suck the moisture up. With that sub-air system that Augusta National employs. So they've obviously put all that in at this venue as well. And it'll allow the course to play firm and fast. You know, we've got a couple of other exciting stories on the table. Phil Mickelson at the age of 50 going back to the scene of that final hole meltdown, one of his six runner-ups in US Open history, but the one that really got away. And could he be the oldest player ever to win a major championship? Julius Boris was 48 when he won the 68 PGA. Now everyone's talked about Mickelson winning that Champions Tour debut a couple of weeks back, but that's beating up on the old blokes. He came back to the PGA Tour last week and played at the Safeway and finished tied for 44th. Phil Mickelson's not going to win this week, but what a story it would be if he could put himself in contention. Yeah. For Canadians, I'm quite excited.
Yeah.
For the nation, you know, Mackenzie Hughes, what he did to get himself into the Tour Championship was a massive, massive step in his career because that gets him a start in all the majors next year. It gets him all the tournaments that he wants to play in. He can cherry pick his WGCs, the Invitationals. He's even going to Kapalua because those that finished in the top 30 are going to the winners-only event this year specifically because there weren't enough tournaments to fill it out. He and Corey Connors are the top two favourites for Canada, but they're at 150-1. I truly think those odds are long. That's overs. You'd get good value there if you back them for like a top 10 finish or something like that. But the guy I want every Canadian to watch, if they can get a bit of glimpse on the television, is Taylor Pendrith. This guy has put an astonishing run on the table at the Corn Ferry Tour this year without winning. 4 top 3 finishes, including 3 run-ups. He hasn't won, but he's a baller, and he's playing so well, and he's at 500-1. And if people just wanted to have a giggle and put $5 down and, you know, in finishing in the top 10 or something like that, they could make a lot of money this week off him. But that's, you know, it's just so hard for, if you aren't one of the absolute stars in the game right now, to win, because a lot of the stars, not all of them, but a lot of them, are at the top of their form.
I'm glad you mentioned Pendrith and the Canadians. That was going to be my final question. I don't want to start there, especially with you, because you can give us so much on the history of the tournament and the venue. But it is we continually have to remind ourselves of this golden era we are living in, and it's not declining or waning. It's getting stronger as Pendrith will join the contingency of Canucks on tour next year. This is his debut, and apparently hits it a mile and is a guy everyone has expected this kind of level from for years, and now he's here.
Yeah, well, he made that, he sort of burst onto the scene of the 2014 RBC Canadian Open with a stunning display, but then backed away a bit through injuries and ailments. And, you know, when players get injured, they lose confidence. But he's found his way back to where he truly, you know, belongs and his potential recommends it should be. So, yeah, expect big things from him. He's now 29. I think he's the third longest player on that secondary tour, averaging 323 yards off the tee. It's just silly distances these guys hit it. Length is no question an advantage at this venue as it is at almost every other. I mean, this is a par 70 golf course too. You've got to factor this in, right? Par 70, 7,500 yards. Simple. And just brutally long rough, 4 to 5 inch thick rough where, you know, you can't lose a golf ball. You can lose a sleeve of balls and it's in the sleeve still. That's how deep it is. It's just a punishing, punishing venue. So it's more winning the war of attrition other than just playing lights out.